implementing threads. And as I said, we'll be folding in aspects of section 4.4 in this lecture. We're going to start off with possibly the simplest thread implementation you could have, and then move on to more advanced implementations, each time adding more features to the definition of what a thread can be. So we'll start off with the simplest thread implementation. Does anybody remember what that one was? It's the thread implementation that you can always have regardless of the underlying operating. Should I say that? Assuming you have the C programming language available, it's the thread implementation you can always have. User space threads. You can always implement user space threads, again, under the assumption that you're writing in C. And probably other languages, but let's just stick with C, which we're not going to, you don't have to worry if you don't know C. So let's draw the picture. We have a process, P, and then we have the OS user boundary. And the principal characteristic of user space threads is, as the name suggests, it consists entirely of user space implementation. There is nothing under in the operating system that acknowledges the existence of these threads, which is going to cause problems, as we'll see. And is the reason why, even if you can do user space threads, you might want to move to other forms of thread implementations. But for now, let's just figure out how to do that. Suggestions. You should all be experts now, having gone through the first programming assignment. That's pretty much all you need to know in order to do this. Well, you need to extract the information that you know and pare it down a little bit, but otherwise. Well, from what we had talked about in a previous lecture, maybe it was the previous lecture, what does a thread need to execute? In other words, what is the thread state? Because we're going to have to, let's assume anyway, provide similar state regardless of where the thread is implemented. So let's review that. What is what kind of thread state does this implementation need, or any implementation for that matter? Just roughly speaking. Well, remember, a thread is essentially the execution engine behind a process. So another way to ask this question is, what does a process need to execute? Well, it needs a thread, but you know what I mean. What kind of resources does a thread need? That's what another word for state is, resource. Registers? That's a necessity. Let me just put words in your mouth, or questions in your mouth. Why, but not answers. Why are registers necessary or a necessity? Okay, that's sort of right, but it's not precise enough. Remember, we're implementing here, so we have to be precise. So that's sort of right, but not quite. All right, anybody else? So what was wrong with, I have not been doing this, and I should. So I'm going to stop right now and take attendance because I forgot. I've been forgetting. The identification of registers. This is true, but what is important about this with respect to threads? Why is this necessary? I said this was necessary state. Why is it necessary? And Brian's answer was, this is why I want to learn your names, because now I can humiliate you personally as opposed to just sort of like you. Brian's answer was, I don't know what his answer was, but it had to do with, saving things. But, or actually, he didn't. It had to do with execution. But that's not quite right. What's wrong about it? Why is that not a good answer? Where is the register execution? Where is the register thread register state when the thread is executing? In the CPU, exactly. It has nothing to do with the thread state. Right? Because if the thread is, it has nothing to do with a thread in execution. Because a thread in execution, the register state is in the registers in the CPU. So why is this necessary? He's right in the sense that it's necessary, but he was not right in the reason it was necessary. It has nothing to do with execution, but these are actually the registers, as you will find out when you implement them in your second programming assignment. These actually, they're not pointing to anything although I suppose you could implement it that way, this is just a block of words that contains state. But it's the interpretation there that I'm quibbling about. Or not quibbling, because it's important. It's not execution that we're interested in, it's... Right, so if it's in the queue, what can we say about it, roughly speaking? Exactly, it's not executing. It is not in the CPU. So then the question becomes, it was in the CPU and it had all this state in the registers. Now it's not in the CPU. There's some other thread in the CPU, and that thread has all its state in the registers. So what happened to the state in the initial thread? What happened to the register state, the CPU register state, and that initial thread, thread A, let's call it? Where did that state go? It went here. So this is registers. This is saved register state. I.e., this thread is not executing. Very important. When this thread is in the CPU or core or whatever executing, then this is, we don't care about this. And don't confuse them. This contains nothing of use. Because the real state is in the CPU registers. But once that thread leaves the CPU or core or whatever, then that state has to be saved someplace. And this is where it gets saved. Okay? Other necessary forms of state? The stack. And unlike the registers, which were not needed, the register save space, which were not needed when the thread was in the CPU, the stack space actually is used when the thread is in the CPU, because this is where the stack, this is where the execution stack or runtime stack is right here. So this is something that gets used when the thread is in the CPU and then doesn't get used when the thread is not in the CPU. But we need to keep it around because the thread may go back into the CPU. What else was there? Was there anything else? I will call this the essential state. There is some other state that we also need, but we're going to concentrate on principally on the registers. Anything else? Anybody remember, since it's not essential? I'll give you one more opportunity to shine. There's status, such as what signals or interrupts will this thread respond to? What priority does this thread have if you have a thread scheduler that uses priority, stuff like that? And then there is per-thread state, which is state that is contained entirely within the thread and not within the larger enclosing process. And there could be some other things, but principally we're interested in registers and stacks. All right, so we're going to need to supply this, and again, the data structure that does this, that maintains this state per thread, is called a... We can call it a thread control block or a thread state block or something like that. So regardless of how we're going to implement threads, we are going to have to provide some form of TCB, thread control block, for this information. And in fact, as we get into it and get more advanced implementations, we're going to have multiple TCBs. We can now go back here and ask ourselves, great, what kind of TCB should we implement for something in user space? And in addition, this will tell us, when we answer that question, this will tell us the kind of features we need from the environment, the programming language, and the other aspects of the system on which we run to implement threads. So what does the user space thread TCP look like? Well, pretty much what we see here. In particular, we need some registers, and we need some stack space. And we're not going to be too worried about the stack space. That could come off the heap, or we could devote a particular piece of the process address space to be stack space. We're not too worried about that. It's the registers that we're interested in. And that's the mechanism that you need in order to be able to implement user space threads. You need to be able to get at the registers in the CPU. And if you can do that, then you can implement user space threads. So if your programming language or whatever environment you're using supports this operation, then you can implement user space threads. So for example, if you're running, I don't know, I'd have to think of something. For example, Python. Python itself doesn't give a way to reach down and grab the registers. But Python programmers will be saying to themselves, wait, there are threads packages in Python. How does that work? Well, how does it work? Does anybody know? Any Python programmers in here? Well, it works by essentially having C routines underneath using the foreign function interface. So the Python can go down into the C, which can then go down into the registers. In C proper, the mechanism for grabbing a hold of the registers is known as set jump long jump. But any language that allows you to issue assembly language instructions can be used to grab registers. So we have set jump long jump or assembly. Either way, so now we have a mechanism for reaching down into the CPU and plucking out the register values and then stuffing them back in again sometime later. So much for setup. How do we implement user space threads now? You should be able to do this from your first programming assignment. You may have to do a little sort of extrapolation from what you did, but it's not that much more. Well, first of all, let's think about what user space threads would look like. So what would an API for user space threads look like? What would we like to see as an interface to user space threads? And this will give us some idea of what we have to implement. What kinds of things would you like to do to user space threads in order to have them for your program? What kind of operations would you like to perform? I guess I'm not understanding that answer. User input, what does it have to do with threads? Again, the question is, what kind of operations do you want to do on threads? It's pretty straightforward. The answer is sort of right in front of your noses. No, this is the API. This is what you have to do inside the API. But before we go inside, we should think about what the API itself looks like, because that may influence the way we do this. Exactly, run. But before I can run a thread, what do I have to do? True, and in the process of initializing. Initialize is fine, but I'm looking for another term more now.
Create,
exactly. So I'd like to create a thread. You want to give me some parameters there, or do you remember from, I guess, the previous lecture? Probably a function for this thread to run. Right? Remember I had that little producer-consumer example where I had a producer function and a consumer function, and I created two threads and said one thread is going to execute the producer function, so that would be the F. And what else? Well, we probably need a stack, right? So I'm somehow going to cook up some stack space, and let's just assume that gets done. I don't care how that's done. And I may want to have an argument. For example, this procedure, this function here could accept an argument. So I might want to pass that argument in so that when the thread begins running, it calls this function with this argument. So I'll put an F argument here. And there may be some other things like priority or the kinds of signals it responds to. And so there could be other things. So we'll just say stuff. All right. And that's going to return something that we can use to identify the thread, and we'll just call that the thread ID or TID. So now that we have one function in our user space thread API, what is the next obvious function? Actually, it's perhaps not quite so obvious. Sorry. We could have delete, but we'd have to be careful. All right, so let me just say delete, but give me a semantics for that. What does it mean to delete? Okay, that's what I thought. So let me not say delete, let me say instead exit. And of course, you have to decorate these names with things like T, capital T, to avoid any confusion with a create system call and stuff like that. Let's assume that that's not a problem. Exit. So exit is something that the thread itself will call to indicate that it is done. It is leaving the function that it is running in. And this could accept all kinds of interesting arguments, but probably the most important one is a return value, which nominally we'll call an integer. But then, of course, since this is C, you can cast it to anything you want. Now, what is this delete thing here? What's the deal there? And this is actually, I guess, another question here somewhere. Oh, here it is. So this sort of eases us on. Well, no, I guess not. Oh, no, this was in an earlier set of mud cards. Somebody asked about canceling threads and what happens to the resources when the thread gets canceled. So let's have a semantics for delete. This turns out to be tricky. What kind of semantics might I want to have for delete? What's the intention? Let's just say that. And then later on, we'll take a look at why those intentions are not good. Well, again, be more precise in your terminology. First of all, what kind of API?
Right,
exactly. So no processes here. Right. Or I should say there's one big process in closing threads. That was just another thread. The parent thread, that's a separate... Right, parent thread. All right, for what purpose? Why would a thread call delete? What is the intention when delete is being called? The name sort of suggestive of what the intention is. Even more severe, not reallocate, because to where? Unallocate, but even more severe. Alternatively, all right, fine, you take a thread, you strip away all its resources. What is the next natural step? What can that thread do? Exactly, so what do you do with it? Get rid of it, exactly. So delete would mean get rid of that thread. So another term for delete is kill. A little bit more graphic. That would get rid of that thread by essentially taking the associated TCB and freeing up all those resources. The interface, what would that look like then? What would you have to specify? Minimally? Right, the TID of the thread that should be deleted. And maybe some other things like a severity clause and things like that. Now, I should put like an X here. This is the wrong way to do it. This is the way they did it in Java. But this is the idea that we want. This gets the idea across. Anything else? Let me answer that. No. I mean, there's lots of other things that we could use here, right? But with respect to implementation, this is probably enough. And let's just skip delete for the moment. We have exit here. So this is the API that we would like to support. Now the question is, with this information in mind, what would the implementation look like? And here, again, your experience in the first programming assignment should help you. How would you do create? Right, that's with respect to the programming assignment. Now, can you just give me like a generic? So we want to do create. Just think more generically. I guess start and end point of what? Okay. Again, think in terms of here. What does that mean? So how do you start executing? You essentially take the registers associated with the thread that you're interested in, and you stuff them into the CPU. Boom. That starts the thread executing, right? Because among the registers that you're stuffing is the PC, the program counter. Now, where did the PC get set in this set of registers in the associated thread control block? Where did that come from? This thread, thread ID, sorry. That's the thread ID. So we have allocated one of the data structures associated with thread control blocks as well as process control blocks is an array of them. The operating system has a fixed array of process control blocks, and each process has a fixed array of thread control blocks. So when you want a new thread, you just go to the next index that's available, and that becomes the thread ID. It's an index into this task control block array. So we've done that up here someplace that I didn't show you because it's uninteresting. Right? And this is the value that's returned as the create call. Right? So we've allocated a TCB, and we've had to put things in registers. That was my question. How do we start executing? What are we supposed to start executing when this thread runs? What is the semantics of the create operation? Run this function. What value do we put in particular in the PC associated register in the register set? It's actually a little more complicated than this, but just for a start, what address do you put in there in the PC? Exactly, the address of the function, because that's where execution is going to start. So we load that into the register, and when we do this copy, boom, when we come out of this, the register starts executing. Sorry, the function F starts executing because we're changing the CPU, which is actually kind of tricky. It's one of the things you got to watch out for. It's a delicate dance when you do it in user space. And that's it. You're off to the races. Somebody suggested that we have a run operation, too. So the create, we can change the semantics of the create, which is to create the thread but do not run it. All right, so now we have a handle to this thread, and we'd also need a run operation then, because we need to actually run this operation. What would the run operation look like? Well, that's what create would do. Create would store the first instruction that this thread would execute when the thread runs, but it would not actually run the function. That's what run does, if we were to have that. It would exactly do that. So this would be the entirety of the run operation. Right? So you wouldn't have this initialization stuff that you had above create. So that's how, if you wanted to separate those two things, that's how you would do it. And then, of course, we'd have to be a little bit more careful because we have arguments here. And we have stacks. Well, stacks, what would happen is there's usually a register called a frame pointer or a stack pointer, more a stack pointer. So you would store in the stack pointer register this value. And maybe you have a bounds register on the stack, which you'd have to include as an argument, blah, blah, blah. So it goes on like that. But this is the basic idea. And what would exit look like? Okay, you're going to have to untangle that a little bit more for me. Okay, so there's two things. There's the stuff that happens before the thread stops executing forever. Okay, and then there's the stuff after the thread stops executing. You can think of it as that split, right? That's more or less what you just said. Okay, so let's think about the stuff that happens after the thread stops executing. What happens then? Right, but that's the point. That's the point we need to clarify. And this is the really tricky thing about writing user space threads, is because essentially, unless of course you write your own complete system, you essentially have to do everything in the thread itself and then magically change. So it's actually kind of impressive when you can get it to work. So here's the part where the thread itself executes a bunch of stuff, and then here's the part where the thread dies. Right? And the question is, what happens down here when it dies? That's the first thing I want to clear up, because you say things like it goes back to, and I have no idea what that means, but we can give it a precise definition. What do we want to have happen here below this line, which indicates thread death? The next, that part's right, but what are we writing here? A threads package, so it's the next thread, exactly. So what we want to do is, the last thing this thread is going to do is context switch to another thread. Now, there are two questions here. The first one is, how do I do this context switch? Right here. We'd have to figure out, we presumably have a run queue someplace, right? So we figure out what the head of the run queue is, and that would give us the TID, and then we do this. So we just take those things and stuff, and at that point, this thread is officially dead. All right, because it has no more TCB, because that's some of the things that you would do up here. So essentially what you do up here is eliminate the TCB, or deallocate. Deallocate the TCB and associated resources, if that's necessary. All right, so we deallocate the TCB. This thread is now officially dead, and the last thing it does is context switch to the next thread. The second issue is, reading this, the second issue, this is the first issue, this is the second issue. Suppose there's no next thread. We're not going to worry about that, but that's something that has to be dealt with. That's pretty easy to deal with. You can always, one of the ways to do it is always define a thread that exists, like, for example, the main thread. Or, if there are no more threads to execute, process over. All right, so these are the implementations. Basic, of course, you'd have to go into detail. But it is actually not more complicated than this. And I think I mentioned that I have an example user space threads package written in C. And it's on my GitHub account. I forget what it's called. It's probably called like Simple Threads or something. But there's huge numbers of simple thread packages on GitHub. Right? So you just go there and search for a thread package and you'll see user space thread package. But mine is particularly simple. It's probably no more than 30 lines of C code. And that includes an example of how you would use it. All right, so this is the basic implementation of threads, right? Pretty straightforward based on our definition of what thread is. All right, well, I have a question. Why isn't this enough? All right, we have threads. Great. Why do I need anything else? Why don't I just stop here and be satisfied? Well, we'd have to fill in the details, of course. There's lots of details here that we need to deal with. But assume that we can do that, and we can. Who could be disappointed with any of this? Why would there be any motivation to explore further other kinds of implementations? That turns out to be correct, but it's not clear to me why. Why is that correct? All right, so the first answer to this question is problems. So let's see, where do I want to put this? Let's put it over here. Problems. There is no true multi-threading. There is, you can run multiple threads, okay, but it requires a kind of cooperative preemption to make sure that one thread doesn't monopolize the CPU until it's done and then go on to the next thread. So you have to, for example, have a yield, some kind of yield function in your user space API to allow one thread to cede access to the CPU to another thread. And that indicates that there is no true multi-threading, as you indicate. But the question is, why not? Why can't we? Can we rewrite this so that we get true multi-threading? And of course, the answer, is, as always, is it depends. But if you were to bet, if you were to lay down money on that question, which way would you bet it, yes or no? That's the another way to think about the question. And the answer to that, the way to answer that question is to remember, what are we implementing here? User space threads, what is user space? User space is not the operating system. So if you're in user space, you have no idea, in general, but again, as I said, it depends, you have no idea how many CPUs there are down there, how many cores there are per CPU. The only thing you know is there's at least one, otherwise you wouldn't even have processes. Okay, so you have to assume that you have a single thread of execution at any time, because that's all you can assume with respect to the CPU. And that actually is the reason why that's correct, because you have no knowledge of the, you have no support from the underlying operating system. Now that's both good and bad. That means, first of all, it's portable. Right, because if you make no assumptions about what the operating system provides, then you don't have those things embedded in your system, and you can move it from one place to another. And that's, for example, what happened to pthreads. That's how pthreads spread. It initially started as a user space implementation that was very portable, so it spread to all different kinds of systems. But on the other hand, you don't have the ability to hook into the operating system to find out all kinds of interesting things, like how many concurrent threads can I have running, and if I can have multiple concurrent threads, how do I hook them up to those individual processors? These are all problems that we're going to attempt to solve in our next go-around implementing threads. There is one other problem, too. All right, so we don't have true multi-threading. But that is a artifact of a larger problem. We have no direct operating system support, which is both good and bad. But on the whole, it's probably, I don't know, it's a wash, I guess. It depends on what you are and what your context is. Third problem, there's lots of other problems, but the third one, which I believe the book mentions, and this one's actually a little subtle. We've been talking about threads and all these happy concurrent executions going on, and producers and consumers and clients and servers. Sounds great. But what's the reality? The ugly, ugly reality. You're on one process with one CPU, right? That's what we have. Even though we have all these happy threads dancing around and producers and consumers, you have one process and one CPU. What's wrong with that? Blocking. If one of those threads makes an operation that blocks, for example, does synchronous I.O. or something that we have talked about in the past, a synchronous message passing operation to either a full buffer on a write or an empty buffer on a read, that thread is going to block. But that thread is implemented in the process, and the user space process is getting no support from the operating system. We can turn that around and say the operating system has no idea what's going on in that process. To the operating system, that just looks like one big process. So if one thread blocks, the operating system is going to block the entire process. That's useless. That's one of the principal reasons we want threads, is so we can put blocking operations in each thread, so as each thread blocks, some other thread will be able to execute. So this is exactly wrong kind of behavior that we want for threads. Blocking system calls, I'll just call it. But in effect, the more general answer is the operating system knows nothing about the thread structure in the process, therefore it does not support it in the form of scheduling, for example. Nevertheless, this is useful. Like I said, you can come up with a thread package that actually works in like 50, 100 lines of code. And I recommend that you all try and implement a user space thread package. First, you have to learn C, which I also recommend, and then do that. It's great fun. And that is our first implementation of threats. Any questions about that?
Well, yes,
you know. For example, you as the programmer would, well, I think most operating systems now understand the importance of getting this information across. This wasn't true like 20 years ago. You can read, for example, well, I should be careful here. If you look at the man page will tell you that doing a read operation on a socket is a blocking operation. And then at that point, you as the programmer know that if you have a thread in this system that calls a socket to do a read, that could be a block, which means the entire process would block. And if the man page doesn't tell you, then you have to experiment. You'd have to figure out if when you make the call, does it ever block, either by doing an experiment or reading the source if you have the open source, if you have the source to it. And that didn't, I mean, threads weren't a thing like 20 years ago. Is that true? 20 years ago, that's like the 90s. Is that true? No, that's not true. 30 years ago, that's the 80s. That's probably true. That's probably true. And so you had to do these experiments because they would the man pages. Well, first of all, they rarely had man pages, but if they did, they probably wouldn't mention the asynchronous behavior or the synchronous behavior of the operations. Now we have to fix this. How are we going to fix it? This is great, but we'd like to do better. We would like to keep these little advantages here, but we'd like to solve these problems. So how are we going to do it? One answer to the question is we make each thread. So let's take this picture. How would you redraw this picture according to your scheme? Yeah, that's right. So we'll come back to that. But let's just make sure we understand what's going on. How would you redraw this picture according to your scheme?
Right,
but what does that mean, disconnected?
Right.
So instead of this picture, we would have this picture. What do people think about that? First of all, does this solve this problem? Well, sort of this one, right? Because now these threads are executing in their own process. Okay. Now we could think about whether these processes are executing in parallel or concurrently. But if we assume that we're on a modern multi-core system, the answer is probably yeah. I mean, you at least have four cores, let's say. So, yeah, we have three processes. We can assume that each one is running in its own core. So, yeah, we now have true multi-threading because each one of these threads is running on its own core. So that solves this problem. But what else? Any other comments? Exactly. If we had these three threads, I mean, just think about these three threads, or two threads doing producer-consumer. Right, and they're using a message passing mechanism. They have a buffer, a queue of widgets, right? So here's the queue of widgets here, okay, and here's the producer thread, and here's the consumer thread. So the producer writes things into here, and the consumer reads things from there. Great, really natural way to do things. What does that look like here? Exactly. Each one of these squares represents a protection boundary that, in general, is difficult and expensive to cross. Here, these threads are all inside the same protection boundary, so this communication is cheap. It's essentially reading and writing primary store, which is fast. Here, on the other hand, we're going to have to do something like send messages back and forth or have some sort of shared store, shared memory, where we put the queue in the shared memory and then have these two processes hook up. So while we could do it this way, if we have fine-grained interaction among the threads, which generally speaking you're probably going to have, then this becomes an extremely expensive approach, right? So this has the problem of becoming, generally speaking, much more expensive and cumbersome than having all the threads in the same process. You could do it. It is possible. This is one solution to the problem. But generally speaking, it's not a good solution. And what does it do for these? It takes care of this issue of not having multi-threading, but what about the other two? Do we still have OS support here? Well, to a certain extent, that question becomes moot, right? Because we only have one thread per process, so we're back to the traditional role of a process, which is one thread per process. So this question becomes moot. And we still have the blocking system calls. But again, that's really not very relevant since we have threads in separate processes. If this thread blocks, it's not going to affect these other threads, at least not directly, as it would in this case. So, yeah, I suppose that this does answer the question, but it does so in an unsatisfactory way in making two of the questions irrelevant. operating system support and blocking system calls. I mean, it's a fine solution, but it doesn't really attack the problem. It sort of runs around it, which is fine. I mean, running around a problem is great, but we want to engage things head on. Oh, yeah, you can do this, but let's do something else. And what's the other thing we want to do? Well, what are the problems? The problems are these two things. What do these two things involve? Interaction with the operating system. It's absent, so how do we fix that? Exactly. Move it out of user space, which means what else do we have besides user space? Right. Go into the operating system or go into kernel space. So now, rather than just have an implementation that exists entirely in user space, we're going to have an implementation that is split. User, OS, and we're going to have some threads here, and then we're going to have some stuff. I'm going to be careful not to draw threads down here. Probably not, since we're going to run out of time, but I will eventually draw threads down here, which we will call kernel threads. But for now, I won't do that. The problem is, if I introduce kernel threads, then we have to figure out how to implement those. Do I want to do that? If I do that, we're not going to have enough time to talk about anything else. But if I don't do that, then we're not going to have time to get the kernel threads. Oh, my God, the difficulties. I suppose we could just punt at this point. No, let's not do that. You paid for 15 minutes, you're going to get 15 minutes. Following some great American philosopher whose name I forget, if you come to a fork in the road, take it. Who said that? Does anybody know offhand? Look it up. So get one of these guys on a laptop. Look it up. If you come to a fork in the road, take it. It's like Yogi Berra, maybe. Yogi Berra has always said stuff like that.
Cheshire Cat. Like, where do you want to go?
Then it doesn't matter. But we know where we want to go. The question is, how are we going to get there? Yogi Berra? Okay, fine. We'll do that. So let's go. Let's do both things. The first problem is, does this actually solve our problem? How does this solve our problem by going to this kind of structure? And then we can worry about, if we have time, how we'd actually do it. So again, let's go here and look at these issues, these problems. First of all, does this give us true multi-threading? Actually, we can't answer that question yet, can we? Because we don't know. Just to draw a thread in OS or kernel space, just to draw a thread down here doesn't really indicate what's going on. So, how would you recommend, knowing that this is the structure that's provided, how would you expect this to work? How would you expect this to work? I have threads in user space, and then I have threads in kernel space, which we'll get to in a minute, how you'd actually have those. What would you expect the relationship between these to be? Yes, but how? How does that involvement work? Too much detail. Just give me a general description of how you would expect it to work. And then we can go into details once we understand what the general relationship is between these two classes. Right, but how? How does that go? What is the relationship among those two classes of threads that allows that to happen? And actually, this is from the textbook. Exactly. So what is the, what's the relation there? When they were talking about that, let's be less anthropomorphic about that. That's true, but that doesn't really answer the question about the relationship, right, between them. Or among them. My question is, what's the relationship? And you say talk, but give me a... No, not like that. How is there a relationship? These two are in different spaces, right? This is a boundary here. There's a protection boundary. So how is there a relationship established between these two threads? That's my question. Don't go that low. All right, I'll take that. You map the user space threads get mapped into the kernel threads, which is this picture. And again, this is the picture from the text. We essentially map these threads in user space into this kernel thread. Right? And then the operating system is responsible for managing this kernel thread. So this is how we deal with all of these issues. From here, if we have multiple cores, then the operating system can schedule threads, kernel threads, on each one of those cores. And the user space threads mapped to each of those kernel threads will then run in parallel, with concurrency. Clearly, we have OS support here. That's not a problem. And blocking system calls, we'll take care of that. We can take care of that, and we'll do it, we'll probably never do it, but they do it in the textbook. All right, so this is the basic idea. Any questions about this? Now we have two questions to answer. What are these kernel thread things I'm talking about, and what does this mapping look like? Not as it is in the text, whether it's one-to-one or many-to-one or many-to-many, but how is the mapping established, regardless of what is, whether it's one-to-one, many-to-one, or many-to-many? What does it mean to map a user space thread onto a kernel thread? So those are our two questions. Can we answer them in 10 minutes? Let's find out. What is a kernel answer? It's an obvious answer. Actually, there's a couple of obvious answers, but let's go with the obvious answer. What is a kernel thread? Well, yeah, but I want to know what the something is. What is the something you're talking about?
Function.
What function? That's a that's not the right way to answer this question. That's not the level of detail I'm interested in. What is a kernel thread? It is a thread that runs in the kernel, right? That's the obvious answer. We know what a thread is, right? We've defined what a thread is. That's over here. That's taken care of. And what does it mean to run in the kernel? It is managed by the operating system. So the thread is defined just as it is over there, and the kernel is managed by the OS. And managed here means things like scheduled, mapped to user space. So that's the operating system takes care of all these other issues. That's what a kernel thread is, roughly speaking. Now, what does it mean to map? Map kernel, user. What does it mean to map kernel threads to user threads to kernel threads? And to make it easy, let us assume that we're doing one-to-one mapping here. Right, so one user space thread is mapped to one kernel thread. What does that mean? And to answer that question, think about threads. What does it mean to be a thread? What does a thread have to do? What does a thread do? It executes in the context of some process, regardless of whether it's in user space or in the kernel. So what does it mean for a kernel thread to be mapped into a user space thread? It executes on behalf of the user space thread. What does that mean? That means that the kernel executes in the context of the user space thread, which is the process. How does that happen? How is it possible? Maybe that's not even possible. Maybe I'm talking about something wild that can't possibly exist. How is it possible for a kernel thread to execute in the context of a user space process? By having the state of a user space thread. If a kernel thread has the state of a user space thread, then it is going to be executing in the context of that user space process. Notice that the state here can't answer that question because the context is implicit by the existence of the TCB in the process itself. So a kernel thread actually contains more information than a user space thread, and the extra information it contains is a reference to the process in which the threads that are mapped to it are running, so that the kernel thread knows which process it's dealing with. So kernel TCBs are going to contain more information than user space TCBs. But that essentially is what a kernel space thread is. It is a copy of the information from the user space thread so that when the kernel thread executes, it executes in the context of the user space process. So in effect, it becomes the user space process thread, even though it's executing in the kernel, which is the same thing that happened over here, except that the execution was done entirely within here with no help from the operating system. Here, we have help from the operating system, and you can now see in a one-to-one mapping, we assign these two threads to different CPUs. They both execute within the context of this process, and now they can both communicate, even though they're kernel space threads. That's the essence of what it means to be a kernel space thread. You can think of it kind of like a chameleon, or what's the hermit crab, right? Hermit crabs live in other crabs and snail shells. So the kernel thread is like a hermit crab. It occupies the shell or the environment of the associated user space thread. And that's what it means to map many to one. Right? If you have a many to one mapping, so these two threads would map into this kernel thread, what does that mean? That means the kernel thread has a choice of two shells to inhabit. It could inhabit the thread on the left or the thread on the right. And in fact, it's the operating system's job to do that scheduling. And a many to many, same thing. Except now you have a larger choice not only do you map, you have a choice of shells, you have a choice of hermit crabs. There's other things we could add here to make this even more nifty and confusing, but we have no time. Are there any questions?